Crosley swings it in. The U.S. go up. What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra.
Lloyd will try a long hit. What a goal from Lloyd. This is spectacular. It's hit with no regard for humanity. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is. Switzerland and Shaqiri have scored in the 90th minute.
That was worth the price of admission alone.
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
McKenzie has given away his Corona, looking for the angle! It's a dream start for Mexico! A mistake in the back, and the U.S. punished at the start. Now swinger for the penalty spot off the woodwork, right on! U.S. double! Level! It's a grown man goal from the U.S. Wonder Kid. Rolled across for Lainez. On his left is Lainez! What an introduction to the match! Fresh off the bench, and Diego Lainez has fired Mexico back into the lead. This one back post, McKennie! It's an instant response! Weston McKennie! Puts the U.S. back on level terms, and it's all to play for down the stretch. Pulisic buries it in the upper 90. In a match in which the U.S. have shown so much character, it's their first ever Champions League winner who played in the final, who answers the call in the very next final. USA 3, Mexico 2 in extra time. Rodalo from this spot. And he's denied! Horvath with the save of his life! The hero off the bench for the U.S.
Well, I bet you know who Ethan Horvath is now. 31 fouls, 8 yellow cards, 5 goals, and a lot of wasted beer later. What an epic, dramatic game last night. 3-2, the United States win. What the heck is the name of that tournament? Oh, it is the Nations League. Yes. The Nations League champions, 3-2 over Mexico. Boy, so much to talk about when it comes to this one here tonight. And if you want to say something about that game last night, give me your thoughts. 512-447-3776 on the Vaqueros hotline. 512-447-3776. Glenn Davis here. Inviting you in tonight, and we got a couple of great guests on the show tonight. We will hear from former U.S. center back Marcelo Balboa. Marcelo joins us in the next segment. After that, we will go Verde, and we will talk to Brad Stuver, who played so well along with his Austin FC teammates in their last 0-0 draw with Seattle. We're going to talk about the art of goalkeeping with Brad. So looking forward to what will be a very good show tonight, and as always, it is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They are the presenting sponsor of this show. All you got to do is go to DaspitLawAustin.com. Personal injury attorneys, they'll take care of you. Car, boat, motorcycle, whatever type of accident you get in, John and his firm will be there for you. And again, their number is 512-865-6710. They're bilingual. John Daspit, DaspitLawAustin.com. So we're going to go Verde with Brad Stuver. Final segment, Marcelo Balboa next. This segment, again, the call-in, 512-447-3776. If you've got a take on the U.S. and Mexico. Did the better team win this match for you? Is Christian Pulisic now going to be the new Landon Donovan to the next Mexican fan base? And what are your biggest takeaways from last night? From what many people are calling an instant classic, and a rivalry that lives. It was definitely a rite of passage, in my opinion, for many U.S. players. Even if you think about the players that were playing in Europe, they were playing behind closed doors. All of a sudden, 60,000 people, huge crowd, very CONCACAF-like environment. Yes. 62 seconds in, Tecatito Corona, after a bad ball from Mark McKenzie, big mistake, puts Mexico up 1-0, rifles it. High above Zach Steffen. By the way, McKenzie, now to his credit, you think about this. Mark McKenzie fought through that. 62 seconds in, a huge mistake. Fought through that to go on and play a game of stability and make some important plays as a center back. So I think we have to honor that he was able, as a young defender, to fight through that. 27th minute, Gio Reyna. That was a big one for everybody in Austin with Claudio Reyna, the sporting director. You saw a shot of him and his wife and everybody hugging, celebrating after Weston McKennie headed off the post. Johnny on the spot, sharpest in the penalty was Gio Reyna, and he would score. Second youngest player to score for the United States. 69th minute, Zach Steffen leaves with the injury. So you cue Ethan Horvath. Now, a lot of people don't know a lot about Ethan Horvath playing with Bruges in Belgium. He was spectacular. Saved a penalty from Andreas Guardado late. Questionable penalty. What a moment for that young man. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, is not playing a lot at Bruges. He's been in Europe cutting his trade, working his way through everything, and, you know, saves a penalty kick from Andreas Guardado. And I guess I pulled a little bit high of a figure here, 60,000. I think according to U.S. Soccer, it's 37,648. So, well, you know, in the U.S., sometimes we pad the numbers a little bit when it comes to attendance at soccer games. 79th minute, Tata Martino brings on Diego Lainez. Smart move from Tata. That was all Tata there, putting him up against Tim Ream. Now, at this point, the U.S. has gone to a back four. They started with the back three, which was questionable. It was absolutely chaotic in the beginning. U.S. getting pulled all over the place in the three-back system. Brooks is getting dragged into midfield by Chucky Lozano. Tecatito Corona's creating all kinds of problems. Center backs are having to cover laterally in these big spaces to their right and left. It was a mess. That was chaotic. It could have been over in 20 minutes. That goal from Hector Moreno stands. It's a long night, maybe. It's a long night. Not so sure about the three-back system. I understand why maybe it was done by Greg Berhalter to try and get Sergiño Dest to join in. Was not effective. It was chaos. Lainez comes on, 79th minute. Cuts in on his left. Now, when he scores this goal, he's only 15 yards from goal. He's inside the U.S. penalty area. Somebody has to go to the ball. But cutting into that pocket in that area always puts a bit of hesitancy in the minds of people. Center back coming out, a holding midfielder coming over. Or is it Tim Ream who now positionally just has to go with the shooter? That's the beauty of the inverted kind of player, and that's the beauty of what Lainez did, and he scores. And if you go back and look at the video, he's 15 yards away. And you're just saying, my gosh, you got to get pressure on the ball. Simple as that. All right, so it's 2-1. But 3 minutes later, 82nd minute, Weston McKennie, aerial threat all night, gets his own, ties it at 2. Now, go back and look at that, the hang time of McKennie. By the way, he was a head ball animal. Mexico was an absolute nightmare defending Weston McKennie and defending corners and free kicks when it came to the aerial side of the game. Nightmare. I mean, there's 8 or 9 guys around, and Weston McKennie is up early. He's up above everybody, pounds in the header. It's now 2-2. On to extra time. Christian Pulisic draws, converts the penalty. Now, that penalty and his emergence as a leader. Now, this is 8 days after winning the Champions League. Pretty special. I think you have to say it. I think you also have to say his future has to be, one would think, based on when he played his best, is in a central area. Because McKennie, Adams, they need him to link up with. They don't need him out wide, too far away. I think he's got to be closer to those guys. And the wide game has to, that responsibility and width and penetration has to come to some others. Just my take, my judgment. But he converts the penalty emphatically. It was a great moment. They celebrate. They got beer being thrown on them. Somebody gets hit in the head. Gio Reyna with a, you know, that stuff's never going to go away, sadly. I mean, it's the same old all the time. Never changes. Never changes. It's embarrassing, really. But I'm going to focus on what was a very resilient win from the U.S. Again, the fight and spirit from this team, average age of 24, pretty phenomenal. Ability to come back, deal with the twists and turns of this game. This is going to go a long way to galvanizing team spirit. Christian Pulisic, again, central. He He stepped up in the critical times. It was funny because I thought Andreas Guardado seemed particularly miffed with Christian Pulisic. Fatigue, 8 days later, hits the penalty. Weston McKennie. I mean, the work ethic of this guy. The fun he seems to be having. I mean, he seems to be a guy playing out there in front of close to 40,000 just going, what a moment, I'm loving this. Confidence pushes it to the edge and then pulls himself back. Another young leader. Three-back system struggled again with John Brooks, Mark McKenzie, and Tim Ream. They were pulled out of place. Greg Berhalter did have the opportunity to go back to a four-back system. He did. Josh Sargent, I think the striker position is one that seriously has to be looked at. But here's a big question. What is going to happen? What do you do now after this dramatic win from a bunch of young guys who've got this upcoming World Cup in 2022 and then 2026 in the U.S.? Now, they have to qualify still for 2022. But if it's here in the U.S. in 2026, and if we ever thought we had a shot at really going on a run and winning a World Cup, you have to think it's now with these guys playing at Juventus, playing at Red Bull Leipzig, playing at Chelsea, playing in all these bigger clubs. You got to think about it. So what is Greg Berhalter going to do with the likes of Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley? Do you mess with the chemistry? Pace is too fast with Adams and these guys, I think, for Michael Bradley now. Jozy Altidore, I don't know. This is going to be one of the biggest challenges that Greg Berhalter will have. Simply, what is he going to do with those two? This is a young man's team. This is a young man's game. And it just platformed last night in a big, big way. Big, big way. All right. It's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. Give him a call. They're bilingual. John's a big soccer fan, big Chelsea fan, obviously a big Pulisic fan. 512-865-6710, DaspitLawAustin.com. Personal injury attorneys, they are the presenting sponsors of this show. Stay with us. Coming up, former U.S. center back Marcelo Balboa played in that 94 historic World Cup here in the United States. Called the game for Univision last night. Marcelo joins me. We continue to break it down. How it would end after an Ethan Horvath save of a penalty from Andreas Guardado in Mexico. Here's some of the headlines. Mexico erratic. Christian Pulisic, Captain America. Martino loses fourth final. So these are some of the headlines down in Mexico. And say what you want. That was five-star entertainment last night. I don't think there's any question. Next interview brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLawAustin.com. 512-865-6710. They're bilingual. They're personal injury attorneys. John's a big soccer fan. Gets the sport of soccer on the air in Austin with Soccer Matters and also tomorrow night in Houston. Great friend, former broadcast partner for many, many years. In fact, we did a six-year run. More importantly, Hall of Famer and a former center back for the United States men's national team. He is the one and only Marcelo Balboa. Last night he called the U.S. game for Univision. Marcelo, how are you? How's the voice?
I'm good, buddy. A little scraggy, but not bad.
You know, I thought that might have been from drinking some, good whiskey after the game, celebrating the U.S. win.
I drink tequila, my friend.
All right. That's even better. All right. So let's, I've stated a lot of the obvious here in the first segment. I want to get into some things that are a little bit deeper. Look, we saw what these young guys did. We saw the spirit, the battling, the resiliency, the ability to deal with twists and turns here. What's outside of those things? What is the biggest takeaway from you?
They showed cojones, man. Mm-hmm. Listen, we know how well they are individually, and they can break a team down one by one. But last night was the first time that I could say that this team fought scratch collectively, not individually, collectively found a way to win a game. They didn't give up. They kept on pushing. I think when they went to four in the back instead of five the second half, they were a better team. And for some reason, there's certain games, Glenn, when you're starting to build a team and something has to happen in order for it to all come together. And last night, it came together for the U.S. But for me, that was the first time I've seen them, a collective effort as a team to fight, to scratch, to press, to counter-press. Everything you want in a team, they did it last night.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. And it did seem a lot more stable and under control when they went to a back four. What do you think the future is there? Because, listen, that game could have been lost in the first 20 minutes with this three-back system because those three center backs were getting pulled all over the place, pulled into midfield, pulled wide. It was a mess.
Yeah. Yeah, hallelujah for VAR, because if not, we would have been down 2-0 after 10 minutes. So, I think in every game you have to look at tactically what you're going to do. You know, I mean, I like the four-back system. I think that they have the players that can play like that. The five-back system, Desch didn't really get into the game except for one run down the left-hand side where he beat three Mexican players. Yedlin really didn't. We didn't really see him get into the attack. He defended more. So for me, it's more of a four-back system. And I still think it's Jonathan Brooks and question mark because I'm not sold that Matt McKenzie. People were telling me how great he was last night. And I thought he was okay, but he also gave up the pass for the goal. He also could have gotten a second yellow card and got his life saved in the game. And then the handball. So, you know what I mean? I still think there's the issue is a center back.
All right. I'm going to defend him a little bit because I'm going to say as a young guy, he didn't get buried by it, though. He did fight back to get through the game. The handball, I don't know how much you can blame him with that. The second yellow card, yeah, Hector Carrera could have got one. I think he could have picked three or four.
100%.
He could have got a 100%. Second yellow. So, but I was impressed that he didn't fold Marcelo. I guess that's what was good for me. He didn't
fold. Yeah, but it wasn't him. His team didn't allow him to fold. Them switching to a four-back system made it better for them because, listen, Mexico, when the U.S. started controlling the game, Mexico had no outlet. When they took Chucky and put him to the outside, Chucky Lozano did nothing really. Think about it. Look what he did. Linus, on the other hand, Linus came in and Linus ate up Tim Reams.
Yeah, and by the way, when he finishes that, I looked at that today. He's only 15 yards away from goal, and there's three guys around him cutting in on his left.
But there we go back again. Who were the three guys? Tim Ream, Matt McKenzie did not step up, didn't do anything, and went through his legs. So again, listen, I know he's a young kid. I'm not beating him up. I'm just saying I'm not sure he's the partner yet for Brooks. That's all.
All right. So then the obvious next question is who is?
That's the question. That's the question right now.
Who do we put in that category? Because Aaron Long's injured,
well, you still
right?
You still got to look at Matt Miazga. You know what I mean? There's Richards that's playing the kid from FC Dallas. So, I mean, listen, I think Matt McKenzie is in the running. There's no doubt about it. But, again,
Walker Zimmerman, Major League Soccer,
here's the deal. We'll find out at the Gold Cup. Because more than likely, Walker Zimmerman will be brought in, and we'll get to see the other center backs. So,
yeah. Well, I don't know if it's, it's obviously not his position yet, but I don't think that puts him out of contention. That's for sure. He did fight his
way through. No, not at all. Not at all.
All right. Talk a little bit about Ethan Horvath. I mean, what a story that was.
That's a great story, especially being a kid from Colorado. Played for Real. Zach Steffen goes down. He comes in. We saw what he did against Switzerland. He played well against Switzerland. He's going through good form right now. So You know, it was funny because we were doing the game, and we looked over at each other with the other play-by-play guy, and we just kind of looked at each other and said, he's going to save it. And I think it was very strange that Guardado took that PK.
I felt like it was going to be saved at home as well, or he was going to miss. I had that same feeling. It's kind of weird. I don't want to be Nostradamus. I'm not putting on the shades like Dempsey and predicting it. Remember Clint was doing the sunglasses on the set of CBS. All right. So I want to take you into something here that's a bigger picture piece here, and we appreciate it. It's Marcelo Balboa, Hall of Famer, number of World Cups for the United States. We remember when he came to Major League Soccer with the Colorado Rapids in 96, the inception of the league, still doing a lot of coaching. He's the Rapids analyst as well. Called the game last night for Univision. Okay, this is a really interesting one. Based on what you just said, you just told us that this was one of those galvanizing games, right? I mean, you could tell when they were sitting on the podium. It was awesome. I mean, the youth was coming through. I thought these guys just won a Labor Day tournament. You know, they just looked happy, supportive of each other, collective, and there was just a great young spirit there. What is Greg Berhalter going to do with this question? Do you phase out Jozy Altidore? Do you phase out Michael Bradley? Or do you risk bringing them back into this mix and changing what is a ever-growing dynamic?
Well, let me ask you a question. Why are you using the word fade out?
Phase out or move them on, or you can use whatever word you want.
No, but I'm saying they're moved on. They haven't been on the national team for a while. There's no need to bring them back. Listen, they've had great careers with the national team. Josie and Michael are doing well there. But tell me why you would need them right now. Maybe Josie because they're still looking for a forward, you know, but I don't think looking at Tyler Adams, looking at McKenzie, looking at guys that can play in those positions, I don't feel like this team needs a Michael Bradley anymore. So I think you move on from him. Josie, to me, is still a question because I'm not sure Sargent can get it done. He hasn't proven that he can get it done. Peacock went in last night, and he didn't really do much, to be honest with you. So I think, for me, there's still a question as at nine. I'm sure we'll see Zardes in Gold Cup, so he'll have an opportunity. But I'm not sure. The one spot for me is a center back, and the center forward, to me, are still question marks.
Yeah, would agree with you. Now, so you believe that Altidore and Bradley have been phased out. I mean, they may not have been playing for a number of reasons because they're known entities, and a lot of these were friendlies. Would Greg Berhalter bring them back for World Cup qualifying? I mean, look, we know how close he is to Bob Bradley and the whole history there.
Again, I think Josie, because of the question mark, and we know what Josie can do when he's fit and he's healthy. You got to probably look at him because the nine is a big question mark still, I think. We don't have a pure goal scorer up there yet. So do I think Josie's in the mix? Yeah, but if you look at the midfield, how talented it is, I don't think there's a need to bring Michael Bradley back.
No,
at all.
I think it might slow a midfield down if you brought him back. In the case of Josie, I mean, Chris Armas is having problems with him, and Jozy Altidore was training on his own in Toronto. So he's not exactly off to a blinding start in MLS.
Exactly.
So we'll see.
Exactly.
Marcelo, that music tells me we're up on a hard break. Great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on, and always appreciate your insight.
Thanks, buddy. Have a great day.
You got it. That's the one and only Marcelo Balboa. Taking a break. We're coming back with Brad Stuver. This is Peter Murphy. This is some great stuff here if you're into the gothic stuff. DaspitLawAustin.com. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 512-865-6710. They're bilingual. They bring the show each and every week. Appreciate John and his firm. And if you get in a car accident, a boat, motorcycle, you might drive an 18-wheeler, you're going to need representation. And you're going to want to get it from the best. The best is DaspitLawAustin.com, and it is John. And the other cool thing is he supports the game of soccer on the radio. So he's bringing this tonight. Hope you like those first two segments. I know you're going to like this next segment, too. Brad Stuver, Austin FC goalkeeper, joins us next, and we're going to talk the art of goalkeeping.
for the U.S.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. Final segment of the night is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLawAustin.com. They're bilingual at 512-865-6710. Personal injury attorneys, John and his firm will take your case. They will work for you 24-7, nights and weekends to get what you deserve. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. He is Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver. Excellent in the 0-0 draw at Seattle. Here's Brad Stuver.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 in Houston and in Austin. It is on the Horn, and of course, we're talking Austin FC tonight. Big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. You call them at 512-865-6710. They're bilingual. You get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle, you call the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. And a big thank you to John and his firm, big supporters of soccer, and allowing us to do interviews like this. We're pleased to be joined now by Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver. Brad, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've been trying to get you on here for a while, so it's great to finally get you. So we appreciate it very much. I guess the first easy question is, you just take us through how prideful and how important that result was in Seattle against a team of that caliber in that environment.
Yeah, I think it was a great bounce back game for all of us. I mean, we were going against the top team in the West and historically a very good side at MLS. So for us to go to Seattle and after some of like a 3-game losing streak to come away with a point and a shutout, it was really good. And I'm really proud of the guys.
How did you feel protected in that game as a goalkeeper? I mean, because it seemed like a very good collective defensive effort overall.
Yeah, I think collectively that was probably the game where I had the least amount of saves. And I think the guys in front of me all committed to defending and blocking shots. I don't know what the stats were, but I feel like Beisler and Julio blocked about 100 shots each. So I was extremely grateful for them that game.
Yeah, some key blocks in there. Now, there was one moment where Joao Paulo, the midfielder, hit a shot, and that seemed to be kind of dipping below your knees. That's always kind of a dangerous area to me. Tell me about that save, because when I'm watching this on TV, I'm going, that's a little bit more tricky and difficult than maybe it'll look like to everybody.
Yeah, those ones are difficult, especially on turf. You never know if the ball is going to bounce weird. You never know if it's going to hit the ground and skip. Luckily it played more like grass in that moment and kind of skipped right into me. We work on that type of ball a lot. So kudos to Preston and the rest of the goalkeeping corps for getting that one, and was able to hold it and not give up a rebound, which I was very thankful for. So it was good.
Brad, is there anything you do differently as a goalkeeper playing on an artificial surface? I mean, is there anything even subtle that you might do differently on that type of a surface, maybe outside of distribution and the way the ball runs?
I mean, obviously my footwear changes. When we play on grass, I wear metal studs. So I had to switch into my firm ground cleats. But other than that, everything's kind of the same. Distribution's a little bit more difficult just because the way you plant and the way you strike through the ball gets a little bit different because your foot plants into the turf in a different way than it does in grass. The ball also plays a little bit differently. So you kind of have to test it out on the day. Everybody's turf is different. Seattle's turf is different than Portland's turf, is different than Vancouver's turf. So you just have to see how the ball is moving in warm up, and hopefully it stays that way for the rest of the game.
Sounds like you're talking about fine wine here, how these turfs are all very, very different. Tell me a little bit how different they are. Some of them are older. Some of them are more modernized. I'm sure that has something to do with it.
Yeah, and it all depends. I mean, Seattle, they have football that gets played on there a lot, so it gets matted down later in the season. Vancouver's turf is very short and almost carpet-like, so the footwear change and the way you move is really different. Portland has been historically probably the best turf that I've played on. And then different places have like different things. Some put cork instead of rubber. Some use rubber, some use sand. So it's all just seeing what they have on the day and getting used to it as quickly as possible.
He's Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver. 78% of his passes have connected. He's got a 1.14 goals against average, two shutouts, and he has started every game. I think it's 630 minutes now. Okay, this Road Warrior thing, I would imagine, is probably getting a little bit old. We're getting closer and closer to the big moment of opening up the stadium and playing at home. Take us into overall how that plays on you mentally and being on the road in this situation, you know, flying in day of game sometimes. I mean, just take us through it, because I'm not sure everybody grasps that on the outside.
I mean, road games are always difficult in this league. It's something that other leagues don't have to deal with it as much just because of the distance that we have to cover. I mean, the Seattle flight was a 4-hour flight. Luckily, we got to go the day before because of how long the travel was. But still, 4 hours on a flight takes a toll on its body and takes a toll on you mentally. To be on the road for 8 games at the beginning of the season, you really have to get in your mind that you have to take care of your body. You have to recover on off days. You have to recover while you're on the plane. What food you intake, how much fluid you intake. So there's a lot of things that you think about differently than when you're at home, because when you're at home, you can sleep in your own bed. You can wake up whenever you want, eat your meals the way you want it. On the road, you kind of have to eat the hotel meals, and with the COVID restrictions, you're kind of in a bubble away from your family. So, I mean, it's been difficult, but I think the guys have done extremely well, and the support staff here have been great getting us what we need. And to have 7 points after 7 games is something that, if you would have told us at the beginning of the year that we would have 7 points at after 7 games, we would have been like, wow, okay, great. But now that we're in it, we're kind of like, well, I think we could have more, which is also a good thing. We want more, and we expect more from ourselves.
Yeah, could have won that game in Seattle. Had a great chance with Jared Stroud there. Cleveland made the save, so it was a fantastic result. Talking to Brad Stuver, goalkeeper for Austin FC. Okay, you know, I love this story about you because I've loved in this league watching the Tim Melias and these stories, the Joe Willises, who were backups for a long, long time in their career. And I think it might be fair to say goalkeepers may potentially have longer careers. You can comment on that in a minute. But in 2013, you're the 32nd pick in the second round. You are the first goalkeeper taken by Montreal. They decide to sign an academy guy in Maxime Crépeau, who's playing for Vancouver now. You've had 8 loans. You played at Cleveland State, which, by the way, has a prideful great soccer history. I know that. And you're an MLS pool goalkeeper. And now you finally get to this point here at 30 years of age now where you are starting every game. This is a little bit different territory maybe for you, but it's got to be incredibly just redeeming, even though I know every day you're fighting for your position.
Yeah, it's been a long journey. I mean, you know my history better than I do, I think. but no, it's been great. Being in the league for so long, I've learned a lot along the way. My parents always told me that everything happens for a reason. So everything that I've gone through in my career has led me to this point and has made me the person I am today. I'm extremely grateful for Austin FC bringing me here and giving me a chance to compete for the starting job. And now it's just up to me to continue to play well and do my best on the field to keep proving that I deserve to be the starter. And I've done that my entire career, no matter where I've been, no matter if I've been on loan, no matter if I've been sitting third, second. I've always wanted to push myself and kind of make myself believe that I am the starter, even if I'm not playing games. And I think that's what has led me to here, just because I've been able to stay so mentally focused. And I believed in myself, and I had people around me that believed in me and trusted that one day that all that hard work would pay off.
Where did you get that sense of I'm training like a first team player every day? Because you know, the amount of time this has been, there's a lot of people, and we know it, walk away. They don't have the mental strength. They don't have the backbone to stick it out like you have. And when you said that you trained like a first team player, it's almost you know, as assuming you were going to start and be in that starting lineup. Take me to that, because that's not an easy habit, or I'm not sure it's a habit, but it's not an easy thing to learn, I think.
I think it just comes from my upbringing. I mean, I give full credit to my parents and my brother and my grandparents, everyone that supported me from a young age. I was never like the biggest guy. I mean, I was 5'2" my freshman year of high school. I never had like the big national team name going along with me, but I knew that I would outwork people. I knew that at the end of the day, I would put my head down and I would be out training when other guys were going to parties. I skipped my senior prom to go to a soccer tournament. And just these little details that I knew that I might not be the most talented at the end of the day, but I knew that I could work harder than everybody else. And then when I got into college, I met my current agent, Denny Chorne. He was actually my goalkeeper coach for a couple years at Cleveland State. And he looked at me, he was like, if you put in the work, I can get you to become a pro. And that was the first time anyone had ever said to me, yeah, you can be a pro soccer player. And when he said that, it clicked in my head and I was like, okay, this guy believes in me. So I'm going to do everything I possibly can to like put the work in. And I trusted him and he's been with me every step of the way since then. And I mean, I'm truly grateful for everyone that's helped me along the way.
Talking to Brad Stuver here, goalkeeping position ever changing, obviously, Brad, as you very well know, it's probably changed a whole lot in the last 6 years. It certainly has with the change of the goal kick rule and the fact that you can play out of your penalty area. Everybody's doing it. And you have to do that in Josh Wolf's system. Speak to that a little bit. And you know, you're essentially a field player.
Yeah, I've been fortunate. I've been in a system like this pretty much my entire career, playing for Greg Berhalter in Columbus with Josh as the assistant. We played a very similar style, playing out of the back. A lot was asked of the goalkeepers, had to get comfortable playing out of pressure. And then I go to New York City FC, and we played CFG style. Anybody that's watched Man City knows that the goalkeeper is an integral part. So coming here, I've been working for 8 seasons, and a lot of those I've gotten comfortable playing out of the back. I've tried a lot of different things in training. I've gotten comfortable with pressure being on me. So I felt extremely comfortable coming into this situation. And obviously there have been other guys like Ring and Hector and Beisler and all these guys like on this team. Some have come from teams that have played out of the back. Other guys, they're still adapting a little bit, but I think everyone's kind of taken a head on and everyone's put their head into it and just trust the process. And I think it's showing that we're a team that wants to build out and we're a team that's capable of playing through a lot of pressure.
Do you like that? Do you like that additional responsibility as a goalkeeper? Because I would think it's almost like you're expanding the position.
Yeah, I do. I love it. I think it opens up the game a little bit more. It gets me more involved in the game. I always joke that I would never want to be on a team where I just have to kick the ball long and then have to wait to make saves. For me, I want to be part of the team. I want to be part of the buildup. I want to help the team in every aspect, offensively, defensively. So, I mean, I think our philosophy is the goalkeeper's responsibility is both offense and defense. And even our striker has defensive responsibilities. So everybody on the field has to know what everyone else needs to do. And I mean, it's a collective group. The way we play, it needs to be collective. So I love it.
Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver, he's 30 years of age, doing exceptionally well for Austin FC, as we mentioned. All right, let's have a little fun here. The most difficult save for you as a goalkeeper, what would it be? Would it be a one-on-one? Would it be a hit through a maze of player? You tell me.
I'll probably say like a header, like off a cross, because you never know where the player is going to head it. You never know if he's going to skip it off the ground. You never know if he's going to like head it high. So those are the ones where you just hope that you're in the right spot and can get your body in front of it.
When saving penalties like you've done this year, what do you look for in the shooters? Do their hips reveal things, their approach? You know, some of the things you look for? Because, I mean, I think we as fans can be at home and we can see somebody approach a penalty and and maybe we think we can guess and kind of think he's kind of shown his hand a little bit. What do you look for?
I mean, I think Nick Raimondo spilled all of his secrets in that article that he posted earlier this year. So thanks, Nick. I mean, it's a little bit like educated guess. You obviously scout the opponent before the game, a little bit of gut reaction and a little bit of luck in the moment. So you're just in that moment. You kind of have an idea of a player's favored side, where they went last time. And then you get a gut feeling. And most of the time you just trust your gut and you hope for the best.
Brad Stuver joining us. You know, it was funny after, I'm trying to remember which game it was, but it was, when Manchester United was in the Europa League final and they brought Peter Schmeichel on, and he said he never took any information about where guys shot or any of that. The other goalkeeper back in studio was, no, 100%. I used all the data, the analytics. I thought it was really, really interesting because Schmeichel said, hey, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. What do you make of that? There are two different approaches. And then how much information do you take?
Yeah, I mean, goalkeepers are weird. I mean, I think that's a common consensus among everybody. But everybody's different. Everyone has their what they use. For me, I like watching penalties. I don't really go too far into it, but we have the ability to go back and watch the last 20 penalties someone takes. And I watch a run-up, I watch where they go, and then in that moment, like depending on the score of the game or how tired guys are, you can kind of get an idea of, okay, if they're tired, they might do this. If they're up so many goals, they might do this. But like I said, at the end of the day, it's just, it's a 1v1 in that scenario, and you're not expected to save it. So anytime that you can get a save, it's a win.
Brad Stuver picked up his second shutout of the year. No better place to do it than in Seattle against the Seattle Sounders on an international break as we do this interview. All right, last one, Walls. Walls, to me, have always been about negating possibility. But now when they start to jump, they add possibility, right? How do you feel about all of that? Because I find it interesting. And now we're laying people down behind the wall. I mean, we got all kinds of cool things going on here. Tell me about your thoughts on Walls.
Yeah, I mean, as we've progressed this game over the last 10 years, you get players that can manipulate the ball in all sorts of ways. People have been getting extremely good at free kicks, so the walls have become even more important. You see guys laying down so the wall can jump super high. You've seen players sprinting back to the near post to cover one side of the goal instead of the goalkeeper. There's a lot of different approaches to it. For me, I guess I would just say you put a wall in front of the player and you make them hit a fantastic free kick. For us, we want to jump with our toes down to negate a little bit of the underneath, but we also want to take away the over the top of the goal. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's make the attacker beat you. Don't overplay it. Don't overthink it. At the end of the day, if they hit an amazing free kick, they hit an amazing free kick, but make them be the hero. Don't try and give them anything else.
Brad, is it hard to hold back the excitement about finally opening up this just remarkable stadium that's around the corner? I mean, every time I look at it, it seems to get better.
Yes, I am very excited. And I live extremely close to the stadium, so I hear the fans doing their practices and their chants and hear the drums. So every day that gets closer to the 19th, I think all of us are going to be really excited to see everyone there.
Who are some of your favorite goalkeepers that maybe you've modeled yourself after or taken elements of their game to add into yours?
So growing up, I was a big Brad Friedel fan. He was from the same area of Ohio as I was. And I went to his like summer camps. So I watched him a lot. Obviously I was a Van der Sar fan. I watched Casey Keller in Europe. And when he came back to the MLS, and then kind of like what you said earlier, my time in MLS, I've really kind of looked at Tim Melia, Joe Willis, these guys as kind of role models. I mean, we're closer in age, but they're guys that have put their head down, got their chance. And when they got their chance, they ran with it. Didn't matter how old they were, they ran with it. So just seeing that they were capable of doing it gave me the belief that I could come here and do the same thing.
Well, Brad, you've grabbed the chance and you are running with it. It's been a pleasure watching you play this year. Real big thank you for coming on the program. Best of luck during the international break and continued training and getting prepared for the next game, which I believe is at Sporting Kansas City. So things don't get a whole lot easier ever here, do they?
No, they do not. But so, we're up for it. We're ready. Yeah,
I know you will be. Brad, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yep. Thank you so much.
All right, that's Brad Stuver joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5 in Houston, and here on The Horn in Austin, Texas. And we appreciate that. We'll take a break. It's brought to you by DaspitLawAustin.com. That does it for Soccer Matters here tonight on The Horn in Austin, Texas, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Get the podcast at HornFM.com. Would love for you to hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock, S-O-C, and of course, also hit our Facebook page, Soccer Matters. A lot going on in the world of soccer. We want to hear from you. Let's keep it going. Also, big thank you to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com. 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. They are personal injury attorneys. They will work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. Tomorrow night, we'll be on in Houston. You can catch it streaming at ESPN975.com as we continue the conversation. Thank you for tuning in tonight. On behalf of the firm and producer John Reichel, I'm Glenn Davis. Until next Monday night at 7 Central, remember, soccer matters.